The views and opinions of the host, guests, and callers of Radio Free ARFCOM do not necessarily reflect those of AR15.com, BBS Radio, or their advertisers. When any techniques, skills, or theories are presented, they reflect the practices and opinions of the individual presenting them, but not necessarily those of Radio Free ARFCOM, AR15.com, or BBS Radio. In all circumstances, Radio Free ARFCOM, AR15.com, and BBS Radio expressly disclaim any liability that may result in the use or misuse of any information featured in this program.
Transmission begins.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Here we go.
Let's go.
All this stuff you've heard about America not wanting to fight, wanting to stay out of the war, is a lot of horse dung. Americans traditionally love to fight. All real Americans love the sting of battle.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty, or give me death.
Radio Free ARFCOM starts now.
Good evening, fellow ARFCOM members. My name is Benjamin, and it's now time for your Radio Free ARFCOM, the Internet's voice for AR15.com, broadcasting live from South Florida. This is your show, so feel free to call us at 415-762-1161 and visit the Radio Free ARFCOM forum on AR15.com. I'd love for you to share your thoughts and comments with us here at Radio Free ARFCOM. And remember, if you or your company is interested in supporting or sponsoring Radio Free ARFCOM, please visit the Radio Free ARFCOM forum on AR15.com and send me an instant message to reach out to thousands of potential customers. And please visit AR15.com site, sponsor links, and support Radio Free ARFCOM and AR15.com by purchasing a team membership in the AR15.com store. Also, don't forget about AR15.com's Special Operations Support Raffle. Tickets are only $10 and directly benefit our frontline special operators. Click the tab found at the top of your ARFCOM site announcement page. Let's get started. As always, I encourage the listening audience to submit show topics, ideas, and potential guests as soon as possible so I can book them ahead of time. A slight change for those of you on AR15.com. Now you can contact me via email at benjamin@AR15.com or simply send an instant message to me, Benjamin. Moving on. On tonight's show, we will have Joe DeBregalis from the NRA, as always, talking about the Trigger the Vote initiative, which is a really cool program. I encourage you all to check it out on the website, and I have the links posted on the Radio Free ARFCOM forum for tonight's show schedule. Also, we have Will Ferrugia from the Executive Solution, a tactical training and executive protection type organization. So look forward to interviewing him as well. We will, as always, begin with listener comments. We'll recap last week's show. We'll have the news briefs, Armed Citizen. We'll have a bit of a monologue from myself in terms of what we're going to be talking about. I have a few things I'd like to just personally discuss with the listeners out there. And as always, we will end the show by discussing the zombie tip of the week. As always, I'll begin the show by addressing your comments and criticisms about me and the previous week's show, as well as any issues you, the audience, brings to my attention, because this show is all about you, the audience. Again, last week's show, we had Joe DeBregalis from the NRA talking about the Trigger the Vote. We had Valinda Rowe from Illinois Concealed Carry. And we had the Dan Littlefield, who is a deputy out in Texas. We had, looks like, a pretty good turnout for last week's show. One poster, Hot Rod 68, said, "This show is relevant to my interests," which we always do appreciate. We're trying to make topics that are relevant to the AR15.com community, so I appreciate your support. Scrolling downward, as always, we have JNK556 tuning in. He informed me that he's got his M1A national match sitting next to him cleaning it during a show. And just for you, brother, I got my M1A scout squad sitting next to here, next to me, propped up on my desk as well. So those of you with the M1As, we're looking out for you. Continuing on, we do appreciate the comments, the positive encouragement, again, from Hot Rod 68. Valinda, welcome to the RFA, and keep on fighting the good fight in Illinois, and we do appreciate your comment, and Valinda did have a great segment, and we do appreciate everything that she is doing for the residents of Illinois. Frequent poster, DPMMN, contributed the firearms glossary. One of the segments we talked about last week was trying to make sure that we use the appropriate terminology when discussing firearms with those who may be new to either the sport or the firearms community and the firearms culture in general, and trying to convey positive messages with the terminology we use. In other words, let's try to discuss things in terms of firearms protection as opposed to weapons and killing and whatnot. So let's try to make sure that in our discussions with people, we do look at these sources. We have lots of resources. It is on the Monday, the August 2nd show schedule topic that there is the firearm glossary posted there, and we do appreciate DPMMN for posting that. So in general, if you people do have a reason to use or need a glossary in terms of dealing with members that may or may not be familiar with firearms, please use that as it is available to you, and make sure we use the proper terminology when dealing with the general public. Again, some positive comments here. I couldn't get to all of them, but again, we had some last-minute stuff going on, so it was kind of playing it by ear, but I do appreciate the positive comments. We have one member saying that they thought the last part of the show was very informational, and that was when we had Dan Littlefield on, who was a deputy, and so we do appreciate that. And I do appreciate the positive comment from Joe here at the end. Always appreciated. Continuing on, I'm having a little trouble with my mouse here, so let's bear with me. Again, last week's show, I did mention that I had herniated a disc in my back, so please bear with me tonight as you did last night, as I am struggling with the pain while sitting upright here in my office hosting AR15.com and Radio Free ARFCOM. So I do appreciate your support and your positive thoughts and prayers on that. Again, we spoke with Joe DeBergalis from the NRA regarding the NRA's Trigger the Vote initiative, which is a program to encourage everyone to be active in voting and getting friends and family registered and out voting. We're going to be discussing some more along those lines tonight. Again, we spoke with Valinda Rowe of Illinois Concealed Carry, yet another grassroots organization dedicated to helping Illinois residents exercise their right to carry despite resistance from Chicago's political elite. She and all the rest of Illinois residents need our help and support, in particular women, whose advice from state law enforcement on self-defense now consists of use your car keys as a weapon or puke on yourself to make it gross for your potential rapist. So obviously we want to give Valinda Rowe and the law-abiding residents and citizens of Illinois as much support as we can get so that every individual, in particular women, have the ability to use a firearm as a carry weapon for lawful self-defense. And again, finally, we spoke with Dan Littlefield, a deputy sheriff in Texas and ARFCOM member, regarding dealing with law enforcement when you are armed or have firearms in your vehicle. The most important aspect of interaction with law enforcement is developing a mutual respect. Treat the officer with respect as you would like to be treated, and most officers will do the same for you. Also, thanks again, Dan, for stepping up to the plate and appearing last minute due to a guest postponement due to illness. Thanks again for that. I do appreciate it. Moving on, let's go to our In the News segment, courtesy of the NRAILA.org news. The EPA petition poses threat to hunting, shooting, and fishing. From the Press and Sun Bulletin, a contingent of conservation groups Wednesday petitioned the Environmental Protection Agency to ban the use of lead in hunting ammunition and fishing tackle. If approved, hunting and shooting would become cost prohibitive. The price of lead ammunition is already exorbitant, but is a fraction of the price of alternatives such as copper and tungsten alloys, not to mention the expense of retooling and supplying for new ammunition. The petitioners, calling this the most significant move in two decades, cite 473 studies that they claim show an estimated 10 to 20 million birds and other animals that die each year from lead poisoning in the United States. Detractors contend that many of the studies are unproven and many more disproven, but the petition nevertheless claims that 3,000 tons of lead are shot into the environment by hunting every year, and also claims 80,000 tons are released at shooting ranges, and 4,000 tons are lost in ponds and streams as fishing lures and sinkers. My opinion on that is that they seem to forget that lead is a naturally occurring element of the earth. It can be found, harvested, and mined throughout the planet. I fail to see how the harvest or the use of lead isn't any different from the things that are spewing out naturally from the ground every day. And this seems to be just another action by the leftist environmentalists to target objects and activities which they feel do not fit in their agenda. That would be hunting, fishing, and firearms, all of which happen to be, not coincidentally, heavily involved with the use of lead. I would imagine that it would take an awful lot of lead fishing tackle or lead shot to be ingested by any animal, particularly in such quantities. When you think about how dilute that would have to be in any given body of water, it just seems to be absurd. This seems to be, again, more of a politically motivated action against activities that the left environmentalists frown upon. But we shall see where that goes. Also in the news, Delaware Housing Authority waves white flag on gun ownership. Residents of public housing in Wilmington will now be allowed to legally keep firearms in their units. The Wilmington Housing Authority suspended its ban on firearm ownership by tenants because of a recent Supreme Court decision and lawsuit from the NRA that the ban is unconstitutional. Good for them. Thankfully, now our government is, quote, allowing residents of public housing, which typically are in high crime areas, to own firearms for personal protection inside their units. So good for them. Let's hope that maybe the presence of firearms, as in many other communities, will actually help to decrease crime, despite what those in the media would have us believe for the most part. We go to Kansas. Gun rights amendment on November ballot in Kansas on KWCH.com. Kansans can have them, carry them, and shoot them, but did you know you don't have a constitutional right to own a gun in Kansas? At least not yet. This November, when Kansans vote for legislators and a new governor, they will also be asked to amend the Kansas state constitution to give Kansas the right to own a gun. In addition to the Second Amendment to the United States Constitution, many other states have enshrined the right to bear arms in their state documents as well. Despite the ability for law-abiding, of-age Kansans to rent and shoot almost any gun out there, in parentheses, even machine guns, individuals in Kansas do not have a constitutional right to own a gun. So we do applaud the residents of Kansas, and we're certainly back you and hope that you muster enough of the vote out there. Again, this is one of the main things we always talk about that we try to make sure is comes across very strong, is that no matter what it is and no matter what election or what the issue is, it's important that we as gun owners and ARFCOM members and listeners of Radio Free ARFCOM, and we tell our families, our friends, and ourselves that we always need to get out and vote, because you never know what the ramifications of that vote is going to be. So we need to make sure that whether it be a county commissioner or a school board election, all the way up to the presidency, we need to make sure we get out and vote each and every time to make sure that we protect our freedoms and we also honor the men and women who have sacrificed their lives defending our right to keep and bear arms. Going to the town talk of Alexandria, Pineville, and Central Louisiana. There is a nice article here on Voices and Views. The power of the Second Amendment helps to guard all of us. The U.S. Constitution guarantees citizens the right to bear arms. I do not want an unarmed citizenry, despite the price we pay in gun violence and accidents each year. That's a road I never want to have to travel. A citizenry that cannot defend itself against a government gone wrong is a conquered citizenry. A citizenry that has no way to fight against a leader who believes one race is superior to another is a dead citizenry. History has proved that to us in countless ways around the world. The notion that jackbooted thugs under the color of authority could ever begin to bend the masses to their will by sheer force is not one I ever want to entertain. Weapons, I have to admit, help level the playing field. That is from thetowntalk.com. If you want to read the rest of that article, it's a nice commentary. Again, it's on Voices and Views on that website from Louisiana. Continuing on, we have from the Denver Daily News, campus gun bans unsafe. Imagine this headline. School shooter apologizes not for killing, but for violating CU campus gun ban. Preposterous, right? Not to some members of the CU Boulder faculty. A recent motion from the Boulder Faculty Assembly supports a campus gun ban, as if someone intent on killing would comply with a campus gun ban, let alone regret breaking one. Colorado University has banned people from carrying guns on campus since 1970. They go on to say that a weapons-free campus invites rapists and murderers to prey on defenseless victims. The presence of firearms on campus is bound to increase that they might be used, claims the BFA. That was a quote from them, but obviously we all know that campus gun bans do not stop mass murders. In particular, the article goes on to cite such examples as Columbine, Northern Illinois, and Virginia Tech. I'm just getting a message here. I'll be right with you. Okay. So, again, another obviously crazy idea that by banning guns, they will prevent crime from people who are already criminals by not only breaking the campus gun ban, but also by potentially committing heinous crimes such as rape and murder. Obviously, we all know, at least hopefully most of our listeners agree, that banning guns only bans them from the law-abiding, and that psychopathic lunatics are going to be going on their killing sprees, in particular in a case like Virginia Tech, who had the year before that killing spree had actually been praising the fact that they banned guns and how safe their campus was, and then found out, obviously, had to eat their words, and the blood was on the hands of those administrators who were praising that. So let's try to make sure that we can, again, press forward in our local towns, counties, cities, states, and try to get our universities on board with allowing law-abiding citizens the ability to not have to go on their campuses willfully, against their will, disarmed. So let's try to all try to fight for that as best we can. Continuing on, we now go to, again, the Armed Citizen column, as we always do, from the NRA. Armed Citizen. A 54-year-old homeowner had just returned to his house in Flint, Michigan, when five armed men approached and attempted to rob him. In response, the homeowner drew a gun and fired at the criminals, striking one fatally and wounding two others. The rest fled the scene. That is from the Flint Journal from Flint, Michigan, on August 5th, 2010. One of the big things in the news was that Elena Kagan was confirmed to the Supreme Court, much to the dismay of myself, fellow gun owners, and the NRA. I'm going to go ahead and read at least bits of the NRA statement on Elena Kagan's confirmation to the U.S. Supreme Court from Wayne LaPierre, Executive Vice President, NRA, and Chris Cox, Executive Director, NRA, ILA. Ms. Kagan presents a clear and present danger to the right to keep and bear arms. Her political record reveals that she does not believe the Second Amendment guarantees a fundamental right. And in her recent testimony, she refused to acknowledge the respect for God-given rights of self-defense. That's why more than a month ago, the NRA announced its opposition to her confirmation. The Supreme Court has affirmed that the Second Amendment guarantees a fundamental individual right that applies to all law-abiding citizens. Nonetheless, during the hearings, Ms. Kagan refused to state her support for the Second Amendment, saying only that the matter was, quote, settled law. When asked about the Heller decision, Justice Sonia Sotomayor used the phrase settled law repeatedly during her confirmation hearings to win support. Justice Sotomayor then worked to destroy the Second Amendment in the McDonald case. We have no doubt that Ms. Kagan shares the same view of the Second Amendment. Since she has no judicial record, we have only her political record to examine, and that political record demonstrates a clear hostility to our right to keep and bear arms. As a clerk for Justice Thurgood Marshall, Ms. Kagan said she was, quote, not sympathetic to a challenge to Washington, D.C.'s ban on firearms. As a domestic policy advisor in the Clinton White House, a colleague described her as, quote, immersed in Clinton's aggressive assaults on the Second Amendment. As U.S. Solicitor General, Ms. Kagan chose not to file a brief last year in the landmark McDonald case, thus taking the position that incorporating the Second Amendment and applying it to the states was of no interest to the Obama administration or the federal government. The expansive support to self-defense laws, the decisions in the historic Heller and McDonald cases, and the Second Amendment enjoy from the American public is a clear indication that Elena Kagan's views are not of the mainstream. Any nominee that far out of step with the American people should not be on the Supreme Court. That is from the NRA ILA, and I couldn't agree more wholeheartedly. that elections have consequences. We're going to be discussing that a little bit more. Suffice it to say that those who didn't vote, those who voted third party, or those who voted for Mr. Obama all had a hand in giving her a rabidly anti-Second Amendment justice tenure for life. Votes have consequences, people. We'll discuss that a bit more later in the program. Anyhow, I got a new carry gun last week at the store, the new SIG P238 two-tone. You can look at sigsauer.com/products. I have a link for it on the schedule tonight on Radio Free ARFCOM on AR15.com. I traded in a Browning 380 on it, along with about $100 or so in cash. The SIG 238 I got it sitting here in front of me on my desk, is a two-tone. It's got night sights. It carries great. It's lightweight, which is nice, especially with my back problems. I don't like carrying 380. I should say only a 380, and would much prefer my SIG 9mm or my Kimber 1911-45, but you can't beat the size and the weight of the SIG. It is what I call a real gun. In particular, it's an all-metal gun, aluminum frayed frame with steel slide. It has full-size night sights. I can carry it cocked and locked in an in-the-pocket holster in the front pocket of a pair of shorts. It may only be a 380, but it's certainly better than the harsh language should I ever get into a situation where I might need it. I haven't got a chance to actually take it out to the range. I have test-fired the handgun, but I would like to test it out for accuracy. But all in all, you know, for a good carry gun, it's got the Sig Sauer name, reputation. Everything about it certainly appears to be a high-quality firearm. I would highly recommend it in Guns and Ammo. Pat Sweeney had a nice article about the different permutations of that firearm in an issue a couple months ago. I suggest you check it out, or head to your local firearms retailer and see what they have. If you're interested in a carry gun, whether it be a 380, it's a little bit nicer of a firearm, I think, than the polymer frame stuff out there. I've had an LCP before from Ruger. I sell an awful lot of the LCPs. I sell an awful lot of the Taurus TCPs as well as the Kel-Tec P380s. I got to say, we're also selling a lot of the Diamondbacks, which is another real nice little pocket gun. If you haven't heard about them, that's Diamondback Firearms. But I got to tell you, for something that looks and feels and acts like a real solid performing firearm, that 238 deserved a strong look. If you have a local gun shop around, I really recommend you check it out. If you're looking for a little either pocket or in-the-waistband carry gun, it's certainly a great offering. They're not cheap. Retail price is about $6.55 and up, and that's if they are available. They are a very high-demand firearm, but again, check it out, the SIG 238. I've got the link up on the Radio Free ARFCOM page. Also, LAPoliceGear.com is running some killer deals right now that you might want to get in on. I'm not a spokesperson for them, but I just happened to be looking for some stuff. I found some good deals. They've got their Operator Tactical Pants on sale for $15.99. They've got their Mil-Spec VDUs on sale for $14.99. And the Elastic Waistband Operator Pants for $18.99. So if you need some new gear, LA Police Gear does have some good deals on special right now. I happened to find a pair of 5'11 Tactical Expert boots on a closeout for $79.99, marked down from $100, $100 from $179.99. And I've been looking to upgrade my boots for both range work and training, as well as everyday use, in particular now that I could use some extra support due to my back problems. I've got a pair of these on orders, and here's the blurb from LA Police Gear website. Once I get the boots, I will review them, but here is their little blurb. Every 5'11 Expert Patrol 8 tactical boot in our line includes our trademark shock mitigation system for high impact activity. The 511 shock mitigation system is a lightweight with super compression and rebound, resulting in comfort, stability, and optimal speed. We have included our Talon stabilizer, a first in law enforcement footwear. The Talon yoke wraps around your ankle and locks your foot securely in its grasp, giving our expert patrol tactical boot an extraordinary level of support while keeping the 511 boot lightweight and comfortable. That's on lapolicegear.com. Visit that for any info. And again, this is not a paid endorsement. I'm just trying to pay it forward to my listeners as I run across good deals. Also, please remember that August and September are the slowest times of the year in the retail business. That also includes the firearms industry. We call this time of year the summer doldrums because it's so hot and no one wants to leave the air conditioning, much less spend any money after summer vacations and back-to-school shopping rapidly approaching. But when you do head into your local gun store, if they have that gun you've been craving, or they've got a really good deal on a used gun, or maybe they're having a sale on ammo, whatever it is, spend a few bucks if you can afford it. Even if it's just a box of ammo or a set of earplugs, don't just come in to chat without at least buying something. Remember, the retailers, guys like me, we're just like you, and we have the same life expenses. We're not asking you to buy a gun on every visit or break the bank, but please, do what you can to support the little guys out there and support the NRA and the Second Amendment. I mentioned to the listeners last week, and I touched on it briefly earlier in the program, that I have a back injury, and I just want to elaborate on that for a moment. Over the last 5 years, I've thrown out or injured my back multiple times due to various things, mostly lifting wrong, but also strenuous exercises like surfing or lifting weights. I was only about 25 or 26 when I first hurt it, so I figured it was no big deal as I'm young, fit, and tough. Well, as I'm not old, but certainly getting older, carelessness combined with the not-me attitude has had me re-injure my back on several occasions. It was never something frequent, but once, maybe twice over the course of the last 5 years, I've hurt myself. Once was moving furniture, a year or two later it was laying pavers for a patio. I've strained and overexerted myself surfing and lifting weights. However, what I hadn't noticed, or at least thought about until now, was that the injuries over the course of the years were becoming more frequent and severe. I had strained my back a couple weeks ago, but again, didn't really think anything of it. Nothing a few days rest and some ice wouldn't take care of. Then, last Sunday, I was working on my boat when I bent over to lift a 5-gallon bucket of water. As I lifted, from the waist, not the knees, mind you, it felt as I'd been hit by lightning. I literally doubled over in pain. Luckily, I had my phone with me, and I called a buddy of mine to come help me off the boat and into the house. Otherwise, it was calling the ambulance. So after that, last week, I finally saw a doctor, a chiropractor, that x-rayed me and told me what I knew he would say. My back injury is an accumulation of repeated acute injuries resulting in a herniated L5 disc with severe disc compression to 6 millimeters. That means my disc is compressed to about half what is normal, is bulging out and putting pressure on the nerves, resulting in severe pain in my back and legs. Remember that your back is the support system for the core of your body, and when you have pain there, it affects everything. Heck, I've even developed a limp from the nerves affecting my leg, knee, and foot. So for my age, that's 31 years old, the doctor said it's just about as bad as it gets without directly needing surgery. A $40,000 operation. $40,000 operation. posted the link to herniated disc in case of you guys are wondering out there what exactly is involved with it. But so that's there for you to click on. So last week I suffered through this show. I missed a day of work and a day of working at the gun range, and have been pretty much sidelined from all the things I enjoy, like shooting, fishing, surfing, wrestling with my dogs, and so on. Heck, it even hurts to sit in my office and surf AR15.com. The good news is, the doctor thinks it can be fixed with some spinal stretching and physical therapy to the tune of 8 weeks and only $5,000. It would be nice to have some insurance at this point in my life, but I digress. The point I want to make for you ARFCOM, Radio Free ARFCOM listeners, is that you need to take care of yourselves. If you're out of shape, get in shape. If you smoke, you need to quit. Take a walk with your dog, your wife, your kids, or the whole family. Eat better. I'm not trying to preach, but I've learned from experience that being proactive with your health is much better than doing what I did, ignoring your symptoms until the pain gets so bad it cripples you. Hopefully, with faith and the love and support of my family, the knowledge and expertise of my doctor in modern medicine, and the restorative powers of the human body in my relative youth, I'll make a recovery back to where I can do and enjoy the things I love. But I'll never be 100% again, and I'll always have to watch and think about what I do in order to prevent another episode. So please, Radio Free ARFCOM listeners, for the sake of your families and yourselves, take the time to make sure you're in good health, and if you have a condition, please get it treated or follow the doctor's orders. After all, I can't have you missing any episodes of Radio Free ARFCOM now, can I? That being said, now we'll consult with another expert, except he's an expert in the field of firearms freedom. Of course, you know that that means we've got Joe DeBregelis on the line with the NRA. Great to have you, Joe.
Hi, Ben. How are you this week?
Oh, we're rocking and rolling as usual here on Radio Free ARFCOM, just trying to hang in there and tough it out.
Well, that's great. Good to hear that you got your back diagnosed. I suffered a very similar injury, as I mentioned last week. A little spinal decompression here and there. I feel your pain about the surgical options.
Yes, sir. But again, you know, one of the great things about today's day and age that we're living in is we've got lots of good technology and lots of experts out there that are going to help us get better. One of the things that I touched on when I was going through my opening monologue in particular was that every vote matters. And the people that may have sat aside in the last election because they may or may not have liked whatever candidate was on the ballot, or they may have not had the ideal candidate. Now we just came across a position where we're all in, where now we have somebody getting nominated and getting confirmed to the Supreme Court that's going to be tenured for life. And that's what I want to sort of focus on for a little bit here is how voting matters in every election to protecting and defending our freedoms.
Well, most definitely. Every single vote counts. We know that from a variety of different historical options out there. Post-vote in the Bush 4, first go-around when we had the recount and the old Chad and the hanging Chad and all that type of thing. We had a very close race with Nixon and Kennedy. You can go on and on throughout history to see how important that singular vote is. If you look at last week's vote, or this week's confirmation of Justice Kagan, be interesting to know, Lindsey Graham, Republican, voted in her favor. Richard Lugar voted in her favor. Collins and Snow voted in their favor. It's one of these things where, if you look back again, historic, I love history, and you look at the history of the vote, if it wasn't for Lugar, and if it wasn't for Snow, you would have national reciprocity right now. Both Republicans. Maybe Republicans in name only, but when the vote came down, we lost by two. Those two would have been in our favor, we would have taken it. So So it's very, very important to get involved in the process. Very important to register not only yourself if you're not a registered voter, but your family members, your gun buddies, everybody you would know, to get involved in the process. It doesn't cost you a thing. It's actually fun sometimes. And there's a variety of things we can do and help out through the election volunteer coordinator positions that the NRA has to help you get involved in the campaigns if you're so inclined. We can get you on the ground right next to the candidate, meeting and greeting, crushing the flesh, and doing what we can to raise awareness and show the positive side of gun ownership. Or we can have you making telephone calls or sitting back at the campaign headquarters. But we can get you involved, and all it takes is a few minutes of your time.
And for the listeners out there in Radio Free RFCOM land and those of us surfing AR15.com, I'd encourage you to go to triggerthevote.org and check out the website. They've got a lot of really cool stuff on there. Of course, Chuck Norris is on there. There's all kinds of great videos and information. And can you tell me about some of the stuff that's on there that people can – some of the tools that Trigger the Vote can be used for, Joe, for the not only the listeners and the voters out there, but for those of us that are out there trying to do what the website says and trigger the vote for our friends and family members?
Well, most certainly. As you mentioned, Ben, the site is a great reference. There's a variety of media-friendly type of inducements for one who wants to get involved. We have the videos. We have posters you can download. We have the address from our Black Belt Patriot, Chuck Norris. There's a variety of different things there to make it easy. There's also a guide, no matter where you are in this country, as to how to register. Most of it nowadays can be done online. It's very simple. If people want to go out there, they can look at the reference material that's on Trigger the Vote, and they can locate the Board of Elections in their particular town, county. They can go and get involved there. Again, there's a lot of information. Then I would also suggest going to NRAILA.org. That's where all our legislative functions are located from the NRA side of the house. You sit there and you see all the programs that we have, from the Political Victory Fund to our election volunteer coordinator positions to our grassroots frontline volunteers to everything that's out there. If you want to become involved, it's all at your fingertips. And one thing I have to say is that our people and our IT staff have been working overtime because all of our website locations and online presence is just fantastic, and my hat goes off to all those hardworking people down at headquarters.
Now, I'd like to direct our listeners to, like you said, the NRAILA.org, the Action Center. That's NRAILA.org/Action Center. And if you go to the NRAILA.org, you can click on the Take Action. And it says right at the top, the NRA that succeeds on Election Day is you. Without dedication and commitment, we can't achieve our goals. And then they have below some of the important actions you can take. Now, I know that, the NRA is very, very good about sending out, mail and flyers. But remember, people, that costs money, so please don't throw them away without at least taking a look at them. If you can have a chance to donate, if you got an extra buck or two in your pocket that you can donate, that's a great way to help. But you can also go, again, to the NRAILA.org Action Center, and they've got email sign-ups. They've got tabs here. You can write your representative, ways to get involved, ways to register, ways to donate, ways to talk to the media. There's all kinds of great tools on there that you can work with, and people like Joe and people like myself, we're trying to get the word out here for everybody so that they can use these tools that the NRA provides for us.
Most certainly. It's very user-friendly, Ben. It's something where you can write letters, you can take actions on a variety of action points that we have in conjunction, that the action alerts, if you will. It's very, very user-friendly. I can't emphasize that enough, but I'll show you. And basically, if you're a few clicks away from becoming an activist. So that's what we need. That's what the Obama administration, or the Obama campaign, I should say, last year captured the wide swath of the voting public by just introducing them to the voting process. So that's something we need to, and I appreciate your advocacy in bringing this topic forward, because it's very, very important. We're in the dog days of summer. In the September, we have some primaries. We have some very important primaries coming on in the middle of this month. But in September, we have a few more, and then we go into full election mode going into November. And if you look at any of the prognosticators out there, it looks very, very favorably that we're going to do well in November. But we can't do anything because there hasn't been one vote casted yet. So if anybody sits back on their hindquarters and not take the 5 minutes to go out there, register, and then vote, I just want to make sure we send a clear signal to Washington, D.C., to state the last 2 years is not what we as a society want. And that's exactly what we need to do.
Yeah, one of the things that I think is definitely important to remember is that in this time of year, you know, I had talked in my monologue about it's being the summer doldrums, it's hot out, people don't really want to do anything, but it's important that we all register to vote now. If you haven't registered to vote or you know somebody that hasn't, you need to register now, because I know how the summer is. I've been crazy busy this summer. My fiance's had stuff scheduled for me just about every weekend. In between that and between work, and I know a lot of you folks out there have got back-to-school shopping and sending the kids back to school and all this kind of stuff. You know, you might want to take that last vacation, you know, Labor Day weekend, or a lot of this stuff is really it's winding down, but it's also winding up, and it's very easy to get sidetracked this time of year and very easy to potentially forget your civic duty and getting out there and being sidelined. And then you're going to come to find that, oh, my God, tomorrow is election day and I haven't registered, or I haven't, you know, done what it is I need to do to be prepared to vote. I haven't looked up my candidates. I haven't, you know, made my political contributions if I'm so inclined, things of that nature, that it can really sneak up on you, Joe. And we need to make sure that we have enough time, because it isn't an overnight process. We need to have our voters' registration cards before the election day.
We most certainly do. There are deadlines. I will alert the audience. There are deadlines. And if you exceed the deadlines, you won't be eligible to vote. It's one of the rules that we have to live by. So, as Ben mentioned, I know it's the dog days of summer and it's difficult. We all got 10,000 things swirling about. Take those 5 minutes to not register to vote. To go out there and do so. Be glad that you did, because coming November, and the majority of us are registered. Take the time now to go to your favorite news source. Mine happens to be Fox News. Go to Fox News. Go to some of the other news sources. Go online and start vetting your candidates. And if you get the opportunity, and this is very, very effective, if you have a little bit more time, go to the district office of those who represent you. Go there. Be polite. Knock on the door. And ask to see the candidate, or ask to see the elected official, if they are there. If they're a true elected official, to come out and say hello. They may be busy, but you'll get somebody. You may get a legislative director, you may get an assistant or an aide. But go there and make your issue known. I do it on a weekly basis. I try to pick out either a state elected or a local elected, or every once in a while I get to talk to my congressman when I'm either local or I'm in Washington, and sit down and talk to them. You make sure each time, politely, and it's very important, politely state your case. And there's, you get more flies with honey. Right? It just works that way. So if you sit there and talk, he or she may be polar opposite to you on the issue. But I tell you, I've got a couple of votes when I didn't suspect I would from people who are traditionally anti-gun. And once in a while, I would get a phone call from your legislative director and say, so it's going to deal with you. It'll be a vote. Right. So, go there. Be very professional. Be very polite. And then you'll thank me, and it's nice. It only takes about 5 minutes, but it's one-on-one. Obviously, telephone calls, they log you down.
It's either for or against the issue. Emails are effective to a certain degree. Snail mail, given the security
issues we have now, they are counted. But one-on-one contact always.
Right, and we're having a little bit of technical difficulty right now hearing you, Joe, but I got the gist of what you're saying, and it's important to make sure that that we, when we do present our message, we present a positive message, we present a good message. We need to be professional. We need to be an exemplar of the cause that we are so valiantly supporting. One of the things that if you guys, and I know this is going to be a big hit for the ARFCOM and audience and the AR15.com members, as well as the Radio Free ARFCOM listeners, and I was just, and again, the NRA ILA website, for those of you that haven't visited or don't visit, I mean, it's really a cool website. You guys that are listening out there, you guys and gals, it's an awesome website. There's so many different things you can look at. They have all these different tabs and different stuff and little nooks and crannies you can kind of just find. And one, if you want to go to it right now, for those of you following along, is NRAILASigns. That's SIGNS.org, just NRAILASigns.org. And this is a great way, if you have a business, you can display your support for freedom. You can display your support for voting for gun rights and gun freedoms. You can all different ways of supporting, but they have some really cool signs you can put in your yard. You can put out front of your business. You can put in your business. You can put in your home. You know, do whatever you want with it. But they have the "Don't tread on my gun rights" yard sign. They have the "Vote Freedom First" yard sign, and they have the "I'm the NRA and I vote" yard sign for very reasonable prices. They're only $16 a pop, including shipping. So if you guys, again, you know, one of the main things about the NRA is grassroots activism. A great way to get your message out there is to put these signs out. If you want to, I don't know what the local laws are wherever it is you live, but see about if you could potentially put them, you know, in a public place or take them to a meeting or a gathering or your Tea Party organization or whatever it is. But let people know that you are not the only one that's going to be voting for freedom and voting for your firearms rights. So there's a lot of great stuff going on at the NRA website that I would encourage you guys just to poke around on, you know, while you're listening to the show. You can look at the NRA.org, or you can look at NRAILA.org. There's a lot of really cool stuff out there that you can do and just look at, and there's all different ways you can contribute and help support the NRA.
Most certainly, Ben, you stole my thunder. I was going to bring up the signs. I've been using those the last few years. The "Don't Tread on Me" sign is the latest of the three that are offered. They're very well made, very well constructed. The ones I purchased have been used, as I mentioned, the last few years. And they fly proudly on my front yard and probably my other properties throughout the election cycle. So it's something where it sends a message. I can't tell you how many positive comments I received. Every once in a while I get a negative one, but they can express their opinion. They're a free country. But it's they're very well made, relatively inexpensive, and they kind of set forward a thought process. And hopefully those driving by, those looking, those conversating over them will say, okay, I wonder where my elected official stands on my gun rights or the Second Amendment or my freedoms. So it's a nice conversation piece as well.
Well, I think what you just said there touches on a bigger issue, is that many of us nowadays in the political climate, in particular those of us who are in favor of things like firearm rights, we also tend to trend towards individual rights. We tend to trend toward independence of the individual. And one of the things that you oftentimes notice is that those politicians and legislators that are out there that do support firearms rights also tend to be supportive of the greater freedom of the individual, and hand in hand in that also with the reduction of the size and scope of not only the federal government but also the budget and the things that its tentacles tend to get into that are not constitutionally mandated. So I would really recommend for people that when you think about firearms freedom, oftentimes you need to think about the bigger picture of freedom in general. There's a lot of people out there that firearms freedom is just one of the very, very – it's almost like the tip of the iceberg when it comes to individualized freedom.
Well, Ben, I tell you, well said. It's something where if you look at the majority of us, and myself, you, and everybody listening, we believe in freedom. We believe in our freedom of self-protection. We believe in our freedom to practice our own religion. We have freedom to assemble, and on and on. It's something where we have this common bond, our God-given rights, to be Americans. And that's, in essence, what it is. If you look at the national parties, the Republican Party, one of its national platforms is the firm belief in our Second Amendment. Unfortunately, the Democrats have not taken that stance in a long time. And that's a fact. You can go check their national party platforms. Now, that doesn't mean to say that one party holds freedom more dear than the next, because that's not the case. But to articulate it, to wear it on your sleeve, to fly the standard, there's various elements out there. When people think about freedom, you think about how much sacrifice has been gone out through all the years of our country. You look at how much blood has been shed. You look at how many people that don't come to the holiday parties anymore because they perish in a battle overseas. When you sit there and you see what people have sacrificed on behalf of and for you and I, Ben, so we can have this conversation, it's amazing that we don't have a more outpouring of support or just more people who take an interest in the democratic process of this country, for or against our issue, just get more involved in the process. So it's something to really think about because, as I mentioned, Ben, and I mentioned before the other people, when I go to an NRA annual meeting, when you have 60, 70,000 plus people, you're amongst 60 to 70,000 friends. You never have a bad conversation. It feels like you have a huge family reunion. This is because there's a small segment of the great populace of this country that believes the same way. Now, if we can harness that kind of energy, if we can harness that pro-freedom belief, we're going to do well. I'm going to be well, and we just got to make sure that we at ARFCOM, even though we're going to have differences, that we look and keep our eyes on the prize and understand it's not an organization, it's not an alphabet, three-letter word, it's the person. And if we all take the time, 5 minutes tops, you either go fill out a scan sheet or some places still have the old ballot, you pull the little switch, polling booth, keep going forward and do it. Because if you do that, if you take the 5 minutes, I guarantee you we have the right to sit and complain with the rest of us. And it makes a difference.
And I think one of the big things that goes along with that is not only what we're talking about with getting back to where obviously we're all busy, you know, summer is drawing to a close, we're trying to squeeze in those last couple trips to the beach, we're trying to get our kids ready for back to school. We all have a lot of stuff going on, and then sort of what happens a lot of times, particularly I think in the summer, is sort of you have this surreptitious sort of, it's halfway between not paying attention and halfway between being too busy to do things. And then you have a situation like right now going on with, when you have Nancy Pelosi going and calling back Congress to potentially pass yet another stimulus, which can obviously potentially take away more of our freedoms through taxes, can potentially do God knows what. And then you have a lot of the people nowadays in the summer, they're not paying attention to the news cycle. They're not really paying attention to what's going on. And then they get back in November, and then when it's time to vote, and all of a sudden the elections come, and they say, oh, gee, wait a minute. What happened here? What did I miss? So I think it's very important not only for people to stay involved, but also to stay informed over the summer. There's never a break. Unfortunately, we've come to a point in the information age in which we live that there's never a break in the news cycle, and that can be a good thing and a bad thing. It can be good because we're always up to date, and we can't let things like Congress having a summer session to go and make new laws go undetected. But on the other hand, it can also be one of those things where you're so inundated with information that you tend to want to tune out. I personally would like if Congress took, 364 days off of the year, because that way they couldn't pass any more laws impinging upon my freedom or taking any more of my or your or my listeners' money. That's just my opinion. But Joe, I think one of the important things to remember is that we need to make sure that yes, it is summer. We have a lot going on, but we do need to stay informed. We need to stay on top of the issues. We need to tune into Radio Free ARFCOM. We need to go to the NRA ILA. We need to go to the NRA.org and all those organizations to make sure that when these things happen, if they do happen and legislation is passed, we need to make sure that we have the recourse through whatever media outlets we have to make an informed decision when it does come back time to get back into sort of the reality and the swing of things and then head into the polls come November.
Most certainly, Ben. Very well said, as always. Speaker Pelosi is doing this for a reason because of what you just stated. People have their attention turned elsewhere. They're going to try to jam another stimulus budget through or spending bill through. My personal opinion, it's wrong, but that's what the politicians do. Their approval rating, I think at last time I saw, is hovering around 11 to 12%, which reflects both sides of the aisle. It's a shame, and it's something where we do need, through the great efforts of yourself and Radio Free ARFCOM, we're going to keep hammering this every week together. They try to enlighten people to get those few minutes it takes and get involved in the process. If we can do that, if we join hands and go forward, we're going to make a difference in November. As you stated right in the beginning of our interview this week, elections have consequences. Well, if we can do just the minimum amount of effort needed to band together, we can really make a difference. So it's something where everybody does a little, it means a lot, and we'll get it done just so long as we band together like a band of brothers and sisters out there and go forward and make our name known. That's why the Patriot Movement and the 912 Project and the Tea Party Movement are so effective. People said, hey, that's it. I'm going to take a few minutes and band together and make my voice heard. So I think that's what we're going to do. And we're going to have very, very satisfying results, Ben, just by taking a few minutes and coming together.
Yeah, you say it much more succinctly than I do, but the point is that we need to make sure that everybody out there continues to fight and in a positive way get our message across to not only our supporters, but also those of us who may be uninformed or may not have a position on the issue. That, you know, there's a lot of ways that we can present these issues and these topics in a positive manner. And I think that in particular, whether you're obviously the AR15.com listenership and the Radio Free ARFCOM listeners and you, Joe, and myself, we're obviously pro firearm, but I think that even those that are out in the rest of America and the rest of our fellow countrymen, even those that may not be either predisposed to a love of firearms, but those who have an inkling in the back of their head that either maybe something's not right with the country, or they feel that the crushing weight of government is now not limited to the other guy. It's now the weight of the government is being foisted upon them. I think that it's a bigger issue than just firearms. I think that the many more of the people in public who have never been involved actively in politics are now beginning to realize that freedom is a much larger issue than a one issue cause. It's not just firearms, but I think that firearms symbolizes a much bigger issue of freedom in general and the freedom of independence and free thought and free trade and the ability to live your life as and raise your family and worship and educate and do all those things as you see fit, as opposed to having to be told what you're allowed to have and own and do and eat and breathe and see and feel, as many think that the current federal government is inclined to do so.
Most certainly, and that's defines an NRA supporter or a pro-freedom, pro-gun individual. We feel we can take care of ourselves. We feel that we don't need outside interference. And throughout history, we've been proven right. These people who want to live in a nanny state, to use the ever-popular term, is not what I'm cut out for. I know you're not as well, Ben. Majority of our listeners, I'm sure. It's something where these things can be settled if we take affirmative action to make sure that our voice is heard. And it will. We're going to get there. You know, you got to remember, majority of people put the president, commander-in-chief in office. Majority of the people. The democratic process. Like it or hate it, it's one of these things where our system works. And that's why we're the longest continuous democracy in the world. Sometimes the ebb and flow, but we're still the greatest nation in this world. And I'll say that over and over again. I love my country and I love what we do. Don't always agree with everything, but I still love my country. It's one of these things where if we just take a few minutes, be rational about the issue, be professional and courteous, look people straight in the eye, and say what we believe in, there's nothing wrong with that. We may not be received well all the time, but that's the way it is. But I guarantee you, if you do those type of things, even those who do not agree with us, Ben, will sit there and say, oh, I respect him or her for coming forward and being a gentleman or a lady and presenting himself. There's nothing wrong with it. Screaming, jumping up and down, you know, threatening violence, that doesn't do anything. It's just going there, being professional, being polite and courteous has always worked for me.
Joe, we've got a few more minutes left. I just want to remind our Radio Free ARFCOM listeners to not only donate themselves, but also to please spread the word about the AR15.com Special Operations Support Raffle. Tickets are only $10 and directly benefit our frontline special operators. And please click the tab found at the top of your ARFCOM site page on the site announcement. Let's just go over that again real quick, Joe. The Special Operations Raffle that you're helping put together for our frontline operators.
Yeah, Ben, what we're doing, AR15.com, as everyone knows, is always there in support of all our serving members of all the branches of our armed forces. And we came together with an idea to help out some of our frontline operators with the purchase of battle implements what they'll use in the front line and become very, very cherished fraternal items once their days of serving in these units are done. So we put together a pretty impressive list of appreciation awards for those who help donate. Every single dime donated goes towards the purchase of those for our frontline operators. There's very, very little, if none, administrative costs. So it's something that's done. We've run these type of raffles. We've done it before for a variety of very worthy charitable causes. We've got some very, very good people on the board and throughout the threads who come together in the service of those who are serving the front lines or our first responders here at home or just another ARFCOMer who may be down on his or her luck. So we're very, very charitable in that nature. So we're doing that. Take a look at the thread. I encourage you to, if you have a few dollars, put it in. We try to make it as cheap as possible, become involved. And we have a few more things and some updates coming in the future to even entice you even greater. But it's a great program out there, and we appreciate everybody who has taken part so far.
And with that, Joe, I always appreciate your time and efforts for all of us, and in particular, we really appreciate here at AR15.com and Radio Free ARFCOM your efforts to help the Special Operations Support Raffle, as well as fighting for our rights on a weekly basis and putting a good word out there and fighting a good fight. Joe, as always, really appreciate you being a guest on AR15.com. And we will most certainly look forward to having you again next week to discuss the state of freedom and firearm freedoms for us here and the listening audience at Radio Free ARFCOM. Thank you, Joe, so much for your time.
Thank you, Ben. Have a great show.
Excellent. Thank you, sir. And again, that was Joe DeBurgelis from the NRA. We always appreciate having him. And I'd love for you to share your thoughts and comments with us here at Radio Free ARFCOM. And remember, if you or your company is interested in supporting or sponsoring Radio Free ARFCOM, please visit the Radio Free ARFCOM forum on AR15.com and send me an instant message to reach out to thousands of potential customers. And please visit AR15.com site sponsor links and support Radio Free ARFCOM and AR15.com by purchasing a team membership in the AR15.com store. Also, don't forget about AR15.com's Special Operations Support Raffle. Tickets are only $10 and directly benefit our frontline special operators. Click the tab found at the top of your AR15.com site announcement page. We have Will Farrugia from the Executive Solution coming on here in about a minute. We're going to take a quick break while we get him on the line, and we will be right back with your Radio Free ARFCOM. Radio Free ARFCOM on August 9th, 2010. With us, we have Will Farrugia from the Executive Solution. That's the executivesolution.com. He is the lead firearms instructor partner for pistol, rifle, concealed weapons, personal protection, close quarters combat pistol, carbine, and shotgun. For the Executive Solution based out of South Florida, he works with local and federal law enforcement, private security companies, as well as the general public. He is also exclusive instructional company to the Delray Shooting Center in Delray Beach, Florida. They conduct carbine, long range, and training at Okeechobee Shooting Sports Facility in Okeechobee, as well as various other ranges across the state. They also have remote training teams that travel anywhere in the U.S. or internationally, as long as they have the facilities to do so. He's got background as a competitive shooter, as well as an instructor in a variety of different services, as well as the military background. The Executive Solution is his company that he works with. It's the full-service provider of security and risk mitigation services with operations throughout the United States and internationally. Their goal is to provide the optimal, hassle-free environment so that clients can focus on their business or leisure objectives. They specialize in providing comprehensive professional executive protection and security solutions for individuals, multinationals, and VIP clients, along with maritime security throughout the world. With us, we have Will Farrugia. I hope I got your last name correct, Will. And we certainly appreciate
you. You did a very good job.
Well, thank you, sir. We certainly appreciate having you here on AR15.com. We tried to get you last week, but you were a little bit under the weather, sir.
Yeah, I'm still I'm back in the fighting form, but I'm still I still got a little bit of a cough there. I didn't think you guys would appreciate me coughing and sneezing for 20 minutes. So, but I'm pretty fit now.
Well, excellent. You come very highly recommended from Jeff, who we had on here a couple weeks. He said that it'd certainly be a guest that would have a lot of relevance for the AR15.com community. And obviously the AR15.com website, we are the largest firearm website on the net. So we have a lot of tactical enthusiasts out there, and we'd like to talk to you about some training that you conduct and some tactical stuff and sort of how it applies to the average, you know, whether it be military or police or even a civilian, AR15.com member.
Well, we're getting a lot more civilians now that are coming out and doing the tactical classes. Most of our training in the past, let's say up until the last year really, has been focused more on the contractors, guys that are preparing to go overseas or guys that are overseas and coming back and want to kind of catch up and refresh, learn new techniques. Because it's a dynamic environment, the training community, things are continuously changing. You know, we learn from our mistakes, learn from various actual situations overseas, and then adapt to those, change them, and retrain to suit. So, but we've noticed in the last year there's been a dramatic increase in civilians coming out and taking the training, whether it be for purely familiarization for, you know, sporting purposes such as, you know, 3-gun matches, etc. But I think moreover, we've seen a huge increase in civilians that have just decided, you know what, I've got an AR or an AK or an M1. I want to learn how to use this thing in a realistic environment. And those individuals seem to seek us out as they do, you know, other instructional facilities. Trainers, etc. You know, if you're looking for the kind of service, you'll find it. If you're looking for the training, you'll find it.
Let me ask you something. What do you think, obviously, with the expiration of the assault weapons ban in 2004, there's been a lot of, obviously, increase in the market in AR15.com. AR-15 weapons platforms in websites like AR-15.com and in general in training facilities all across the United States. I mean, you can look at, you know, there's so many of them out there now. But yep. Other than that, what do you attribute that sort of explosion in tactical mindset courses, weapons platforms, and now the application to the civilian market that seems to have become so superfluous out there?
I think there's several reasons for it. I think, you know, one of the reasons is obviously the availability of the you know, of the weapons themselves. You know, back in the if you go back 10-15 years, not every gun shop carried a vast selection of ARs. If you look at the proliferation of the AR as a system, it's now without question the most common, the most sought after, the most used semi-automatic platform out there. And because of that, you know, there's more and more people buying them, more and more people looking to figure out how to use them for different applications. But you also have you know, the relevant political environment that that pushes the sales of these weapons. People were scared that they wouldn't be able to get them. They bought more of them. Whenever there's change in government or potential change in government, it tends to push gun sales, specifically in the black gun market. Everybody rushes out and buys more. And then once we've got them, you know, what do we do with them? You also have, of course, the other environment, which has a big bearing on this, and that's the amount of guys that are coming out of the armed forces. They're coming back from Iraq, Afghanistan, that served, or maybe still serving. And, you know, these weapons are the standard issue. This is what they're used to. This is what they understand. So it wouldn't make sense for them to want to maintain training or to increase their training with those types of weapon systems.
And when we talk about civilian training, I mean, obviously there's different definitions of civilian. Some would consider law enforcement to be civilian. Some would consider those that have left the military to be civilian, or they consider them former military. But in general, when most people think of civilian, they tend to think of a non-law enforcement and non-military or non-former or current military. And where do you see that market? How has that market expanded, and why do you think that is?
I think it definitely has expanded, and it's continuing to do so. We are giving far more classes now a week. Let's change that. We have a lot more civilians using that definition coming into our classes now than ever before. And I think it's a combination. There are individuals that haven't had the opportunity to use a firearm in a dynamic environment that would love to do it. Maybe they've talked about it. They might have read magazines about it. They might have seen it played out on TV, etc. And the opportunity is there to, hey, you know, I'd like to give this a go. So I think a lot of it is, you know, average Joe out there, average guy. This is, I can buy one of these. I can own one of these. It's just static paper punching after a while. Gets a little bit monotonous. You know, what else could I do with it? And there's a lot you can do more in the dynamic environment, you know, using the firearm in a realistic manner, that it could be employed in a defensive way for a civilian, whether it's defending the home, property, etc.
Right, and obviously that's become a lot more common nowadays. I mean, there's a lot of people that are worried about, you know, particularly where you and I are located in South Florida, there's the whole threat of a hurricane. But of course, countrywide and of course, you know, worldwide, there's always the threat of natural disaster or potential calamity where one might have to incorporate their, you know, their designated weapons platform into use in a role defending the family or the home. Now, where do you, and with that, obviously, there's a lot of people, and I'm in the retail firearms business. You know, I sell firearms out of a retail store. I'm also an NRA certified instructor, so I do training. But I noticed that a lot of people that are out there, they are taking advantage of the availability of a weapons platform, but many of them either don't know or aren't aware or don't care about training and actually getting to use that firearm in a tactical manner. So let me ask you this. What do you think are some of the deficits of not getting adequate training, and also what are some of the biggest deficiencies you see in people that don't actually train with that firearms platform that they're now have the ability to purchase?
I think it's a great question. I think the single most frustrating part for us as instructors or instructional facilities is the concept of this concept of I'm going to buy more equipment and put it on the weapon, and that's going to make me better. we have more with the civilians than we do with the military or professional security guys. When they show up for training, they tend to have every gadget known to man hanging off of their AR. By the end of the first day, we find that those guns end up being stripped back down to a basic weapon with an optic. Everything else gets taken off because, in theory, adding more and more equipment to this weapon makes it more attractive. But when you actually have to pick the thing up and run around with it for 7 hours, when it's actually on your body, slung on you, you start to learn what you can and can't do with it and what deficiencies are. And unfortunately, most people that are going out and buying these guns will buy them. They will trick them out with every gadget known to man. They'll take them to a static range and shoot either from a bench or prone. And that's all they're ever going to do with it. And if that's all they're going to do, that's fine, and they have fun, and that's great. But there's this mentality that I bought the gun, I've got all the gear, I can go and I can shoot 3-inch groups at 100 yards with it. That's it, I'm good to go. And the truth is, in a realistic environment, they're not good to go. The people that take that next step, and the light bulb goes on, and they come and they take training, whether it's from us or anybody else, in that tactical environment, you see the light bulb switch on. You see them realize that, you know what, when I'm moving with this weapon and I'm engaging targets as I'm moving, it's different. When I've got to get in and out of a vehicle, when I've got to go around a corner, when I've got to go through a building, you know, once I fired off a magazine and I need to transition to a pistol and I blow this gun down, oh, guess what, if I'm wearing shorts, I'm going to burn my leg. They don't realize that until they do it. The simple malfunctions that occur on the AR system, very simple malfunctions that can be dealt with very easily, but they don't generally come out in a static, slow-fire, box-range environment. They'll come out once you start using that gun in a more dynamic environment, when you're shooting in a rapid engagement, when you're moving, when you're getting that gun dirty, when you're going down, prone, kneeling, moving around, when you fire 100 rounds very quickly at multiple targets moving, if that gun's going to malfunction, that's the environment you're going to find it malfunctioning. So it's frustrating for us to watch the gun sales increase and not see the same increase, let's say, same percentage increase in the training. We are, without doubt, definitely have more civilians coming on and taking these classes than ever before. But if you look at it statistically, percentage-wise, it's still not at the same level that it should be with the amount of weapons being sold.
Right. And John, more to your point with that is, obviously, there's a deficiency of training out there. We certainly see it all the time. You know, and in particular, and not to try to, you know, harp on or badmouth any former military law enforcement, but a lot of times we have guys that were, you know, former military who may have been, you know, a mechanic or a cook,
yep,
or an air conditioning tech, that, yes, they were in the military, but they weren't exactly operators. I mean, they weren't out there,
yep,
on the front lines, you know, or you have a law enforcement individual who, you know, was yeah, they're, you're in law enforcement, and we're very proud that, and we mean no disrespect, and we're certainly proud of everyone that served, whether you be a clerk making photocopies or out there, you know, doing EOD work. We appreciate and we honor all that who served, but that does not mean that every person, whoever was to wear a name tag or a badge, was a firearm expert. And in particular, with the civilians, you know, a lot of the advice is garnered from friends and family who was military or police.
Yep.
And so where do you see, going back to that, some of these things that – where do you see the big deficiencies, and where do you see people coming with – I guess you see all this stuff coming that you say, well, okay, you end up stripping down your rifle at the end. What are some of the big misses that people, I guess, they put on something or they have too much or not enough of, and what are those sort of hits and misses?
Well, I think that there's several elements. Element number one is, you're absolutely right. People take advice, you know, from people they know, and rightly or wrongly. They'll ask their, you know, their buddy. Hey, my buddy was in the army. I'll ask him. You know, I've got another buddy. He's a police officer. I'll ask him. You know, because you're presuming that that individual knows. It's rather like, you know, asking someone that drives a Chevy, you know, to teach you how to, you know, how to race that Chevy around a racetrack. Just because he owns a Chevy doesn't make him Dale Earnhardt. Just because he's been around that environment doesn't make him an instructor. Having said that, some of the best instructors that we have never, ever used a firearm in a tactical manner in service. They've used them in a tactical manner outside. You can be a great instructor. You don't necessarily need to be an operator, the instructor, and vice versa. So it's horses for courses, as we say, depending on what the application is. The biggest, let's say, surprise for the average civilian student that shows up to one of their classes is when they get there with every gadget known to man hanging off their gun, because that's what, you know, that's what their friend told them they needed, or what the guy in the gun shop told them they needed. It's the magnifier. It's the co-witnessing. It's the, you know, the one-point sling that doesn't actually fit, doesn't work correctly for them. It's the leg holster that they're never, ever going to use, the thigh holster, the thigh rig. The 3-4 pound scope sitting on top of, or the variable scope sitting on top of that gun. They're not going to use it. The average civilian shooter, that whether even if he's just going to go and, let's say, do a competition. Let's say you want to go and do a 3-gun match. You're not going to use all of that stuff. You don't need 2 flashlights, a laser. It's just added weight. Added bulk. It slows you down, it malfunctions, it gets tangled. So that's the thing that you notice the most, is they get there with all this stuff. We don't tell them, we don't push them to remove the stuff. We just say, great, we'll teach you to work with what you got. And you watch the stuff gradually over the course of the class kind of removed, to where they end up with the gun, their ammunition, the way of carrying their ammo, and an optic, you know, or open sights. Most engagements that civilians ever going to get into, 50 to 75 yards is a long way for a civilian to be fighting, if you look at it in a realistic manner. And that's what we try to do in our training is, you know, let's look at how you're going to use this gun in a realistic manner, in the real world. We can teach you how to shoot this gun at 500 yards. We have those facilities, and we can do that. You're never going to do it. It's never going to come up. Switching, you know, putting a magnifier on. How realistic is that I'm ever going to use it? You're not. You're really not. It's not going to happen. They're fun to have. They're fun to play with. But there has to be a defining line. Our concept as a company is to teach people to shoot the firearm the way they would shoot it in a realistic environment based on what their specific needs are. So it's, you know, train as you fight as you train. That's the whole concept. And I understand that when an individual goes into a store and he says, you know, I've been thinking about putting something on my gun, I've read about this, it sounds good, it looks good, the magazines tell you this is what you need, they buy it, they bolt it on. Doesn't make the product bad, doesn't mean it's not useful, it just means in a realistic environment that individual can use that product in, it's not relevant.
Going back to what you just said, I often, when I have customers come into my store, and I sell an awful lot of AR-15s, I mean, I probably sell, you know, one a week every 2 weeks, and we're a very small store, so take it for what it's worth as far as the numbers go, but we sell a pretty good amount of AR-15s, and we generally sell, you know, a basic model plain Jane M4 clone, not a lot of frills to it, but I always tell people, I say, look, for 99% of civilian use, this is the AR-15 that you're going to need. It comes with your magazine. I have good aftermarket Magpul magazines in stock that you can purchase. But pretty much all you're ever going to need is some extra mags, some ammo, and the gun that I'm selling you, and the training. If you want then to upgrade to an optic, you know, spend the money, spend the $400 or $500 or $600, but don't buy junk. Get something good. That, I always tell them, buy once, cry once. Get the good thing that you're going to be able to afford. But the thing that I tell clients in my store, and they come in and they say, oh, I want to do this. I want to do some tactical stuff. I want to do some bench rest. I want to do some planking. I want to do some long range. And I tell my customers all the time, I say, like, what are you going to be doing 85 to 95% of your time? And what are you going to be doing 15 to 5% of your time? And base your purchase on what you're going to be doing 85 to 90 to 95% of your time. And forget about the other stuff because you only might be doing it every once in a while. If it's not going to be something you're going to do all the time, I wouldn't make a $1,000 purchase based around that for the average price of an AR, and then whatever you want to include with an optic could be potentially more than that. So give me your take on that as far as what people are getting it versus the amount they're actually going to use it.
You're absolutely right. And that goes back to the fact that, you know, the consumer is led to believe, normally because of what they see on TV, or normally because of the conversation they've had with an experienced shooter, that, hey, if I have this particular gadget, it's going to make me better. You know, the magnifier, whether it be a variable high power scope, whether it be, you know, a specific type of forward grip, whether it be a different stock, whether it be whatever it is, you know, flip-up sights are better than the regular sights, and it's all about the product. And they fail, most of them, because no one's educated them. They fail to understand that all of those gadgets are gadgets. They're add-ons. If you buy a stock standard M4 AR, stock standard weapon, pick it up, home sight, just like you said, put a sling on it. If you're going to be running and gunning with the gun, you need a sling. Other than that, just load her up, get your mag, good quality mag, and that's all you need. Once you get to a level of competency with the weapon, that's when you should be moving and saying, okay, you know what, I'd like to put an optic on it now. And then get the optic, and then train with the optic. You know, it's kind of like, I always equate it to, again, vehicles, because people relate to them. It's kind of like saying, you know, I've decided I want to get a car, I think I'm going to buy a Formula One Ferrari. You know, maybe you want to buy a regular car first, learn how to drive, you know, before we run out and buy the Formula One Ferrari, because you're not going to appreciate the nuances of that car and what it can do. And again, it's not because the consumer is stupid. It's because the consumer doesn't know. No one's educated them. So they're constantly looking for guidance. Once they go out and they take a class, again, whether it's from us or whoever, they get professional training, the light bulb switches on. You know, they start to understand. When the biggest question is asked to us when students are phoned up, so I'm getting ready for the class, I've got the equipment list that you told me I need, is there anything else you suggest I get for my gun? And my stock response is, yeah, buy more ammo, shoot more. Go train more. Go practice more. You know, you're better off spending an extra $1,000 in ammunition and training and getting your skill level up than you are on going out and buying another, whatever, gadget to slam on that firearm, or buying another firearm on top thinking that the gun itself is going to increase your skill.
And I have to agree with that 100%. Now, an interesting corollary to that is I've done a lot of training for fishing, and I'm also a part-time fishing guide users, you will know me from my former username as FL Fly Fishing Guide, and I've taken a lot of classes as far as learning to fly fish. And the corollary is this, is that when you begin, you need to learn on the most basic equipment to get your skill level to where you become proficient. Once you become proficient, then you outgrow your gear up to the point where you become what you would call, I guess, a moderate to skilled level, and then you need the equipment to make you perform at your best. But yep. Then you get to the point where you become so good that it doesn't matter what equipment you pick up. It could be the most basic, cheap thing or non-fancy or whatever, and you can still use it better than either of the two brackets lower than your potential skill level can. It's like it's almost like the parabolic curve where you go up, 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 where you start with low skill and you begin to grow, you begin to climb with your skill and with your equipment costs, and then you reach a peak, and then you peak on your skill, but then you begin to go down with the amount of money you have to spend on gear because your skill becomes so good that you can basically pick up anything and be an expert with it. What's your take on that?
I think you're absolutely right. You can take a great shooter, someone that is a great shooter because he's put time and effort in and he understands fundamentals and he can shoot, whether it's a rifle or a pistol, whatever the discipline, and he'll be able to pick up any rifle or pistol and shoot it well. You can take somebody else that has gone out, knows nothing, bought the best of the best equipment, let's say the rifle, the best possible rifle in its class, the best optics in its class, the best mount, the best of everything, and has a limited amount of training, and he will be a reasonable shot, reasonable, chance shot, reasonable. The equipment itself is going to get you to a certain point, but you need the skills to be able to maximize the use of that equipment. So you're absolutely right. A good shooter can shoot anything. A new shooter has got high-tech gear, he's going to get to a certain level and stop. The gear doesn't make you the shooter. It's the training, the repetition, the time and effort. I was asked this weekend, we had an advanced pistol class out at Okeechobee, and one of the students that came up, said, what makes a good shooter a good shooter? If we all have the same equipment, what really makes one guy better than the other? And my standard response is shooting. He who puts the most time in, puts the most effort in, trains the most, and is open to training, will become the better shooter. It's that simple. Now, there is obviously an amount of natural ability that goes into shooting like anything else, hand-eye coordination, etc. But I truly believe you can take anybody. I believe you can take anybody and turn them into a good shooter. It's not about the equipment. It's about the time and effort. I was at a match a few years ago now in Manatee. We were shooting 565 yards long range with 308. There's a line of guys, and we're all shooting. And I remember hearing the guy at the end of the line saying, "Who's the new guy?" Which was my buddy that had come down. And he borrowed a Savage, 308 Savage, a rifle with a 610 power scope, real basic equipment, inexpensive equipment, to shoot the match. He was visiting with me. And this guy's hitting every plate out there, the 565 yards. And I hear this guy at the other end of the line say, "Who's the guy hitting all the plates?" He says, "Oh, no, some new guy." He says, "What's he shooting?" "Oh, it's a Savage, I think." "Really? What kind of scope?" "Well, it's just a 10-pound, 6-pound. And these guys were amazed that this new guy, this new shooter, could do so well with this basic equipment. Well, this new shooter's been shooting for 25 years. He's one of the top long-range rifle shooters in Europe. He's not a new guy. He knows how to shoot. And that's the difference. The equipment plays a role, but it's not the answer. The equipment's just the equipment.
let me ask you one thing that we had sort of, I've been waiting to ask you this question, and we sort of touched on it earlier. And one of the things you were talking about was that when you do have shooters come out there and you have lots of tactical gear and they've got the AR decked out and all tricked out and they've got, you know, everything in the kitchen sink bolted on to a poor AR-15, and now the thing, you go from a 7.5-pound rifle to a 15-pound rifle because they've got every light, laser, and modification on the poor thing. What's your take on lights and lasers and other accessories? And if somebody were to show up to one of your classes, what would be the things that you would typically caution toward or against as far as what parts are they going to be taken off? What are some of the lights and lasers that they might decide to keep? You know, where do you make that determination as far as quality and accessories that are actually useful versus those that are not?
Right. I think a forward, a forward grip, I hate using brand names, but the Tango Down Concept grip. I think that's a useful piece of kit. I think a retractable bipod built into the Tango Down style grip, I think that's a useful bit of kit for when you're going prone, when you're getting up moving, when you have to use one hand, when you have to move that gun out of the way, specifically when you're transitioning. I think that's a useful bit of kit. A decent optic. I'm not big on cheap optics. You know, I believe if you're going to put an optic on the gun, put an optic that can withstand a beating. Whatever you put on that gun needs to be able to take a beating. Not because you are going to beat the gun up, but because if it's actually used in a realistic environment, it probably is going to get dropped. It probably is going to get banged into a wall. You probably are going to dive on the ground. The gun needs to be able to withstand that. So a decent optic. I don't like anything which is too finessey, anything that requires too much finesse to operate, purely on the basis that fine motor skills tend to degrade dramatically under high stress. So anything that requires you to flip switches, pull buttons, flip levers to make it work, I'm not a big fan of it because your hands turn into big flippers, when you're under stress. And being able to manipulate those little levers, switches, and buttons, regardless of how much you train with them, becomes difficult. I don't like lasers and flashlights, etc., on the gun that require wads and wads of wires and buttons. Anything that's hanging off that gun that can catch, snag, will catch, will snag. Anything that runs off a battery will break down, normally when you least want it to break down. So I'm not, again, if somebody shows up and they've got a flashlight and a gun, that's great. I normally ask them if we're going to be shooting in the dark today. If the answer is no, I ask them, why do we need a flashlight on the gun right now? If they've got a laser on the gun, I try to understand the logic between why have we got a laser on this firearm. What is the purpose of it? How do you see you using it? And a lot of times, just by talking through the product on the gun, and its application to that individual, the light bulb goes on its own. You actually see the student go, yeah, you know what? Yeah, I see that. I can't see this actually being of use to me now. So it gets taken off. But I think the single biggest reason they remove all the gadgets from the guns is because, like you said, that gun now becomes a 14, 15-pound weight that they're going to run around with for 7 hours. That gets old real quick. So if they're not using that particular attachment, they detach it.
Okay, but to kind of flip that question back at you, obviously we have now many more civilians. I mean, I'm sitting here right now in my studio, probably not more than 100 miles away from me because I'm in South Florida too, but I've got my little home defense, carbine, with a light attached to it. An AR-15 carbine. Where do you draw the balance between necessary and not necessary? I mean, obviously, a lot of the AR-15.com listening audience does have some form of modification. But I'm of your opinion where I try to keep it pretty simple. I'm sitting here literally looking at the thing in my lap. It's got an optic and a light, and that's it. So
yep, that's about it. That's about exactly what you need on this. So the average, again, it depends on the application of the weapon and the individual that's using it. So the average civilian out there that's got an AR, that's pretty much all you need. Decent set of optics and a flashlight mounted to the gun. A flashlight, which is, again, when you're picking the flashlight, it's going to be a high-quality flashlight. Flashlight doesn't take up, you know, half the gun. A flashlight which can go on, can be switched on and off extremely easily. If you have to think about it, if you have to find the switch, that you need to change the system. It doesn't work for you. Flashlight that can be turned on and off very quickly to allow you illuminate, light off, move. We do the night training classes. Single biggest issue we have with people that get flashlights on their weapons is they believe that once their flashlight's on, you know, they can light up the world and, you know, and it's wonderful. The problem is when you flip that flashlight on, you become a bullet trap. Everybody's going to start shooting at that flashlight. So the flashlight should come on. You should engage. That light comes off and now we need to move. So you're moving in the dark. So flashlight is a great idea, but it has its negatives. And its negatives are, once you flip that flashlight on, everybody knows where you're at. Bad guys know where you're at. Bad guys are going to shoot that flashlight. And if you've got that gun mounted, it means those bullets are coming straight to your head. So there's a pro and a con to it. Again, with the right training, it's fine. But that's really all you need. Good flashlight, easy to manipulate, reliable. Something can go on and off quickly. There's some flashlights out there now which have, I don't know, a dozen different functions. You scroll through the functions. You know, the more things you have to go wrong, the more things are going to go wrong. I like simple on, off. Keep it simple. Make sure you can manipulate it. And that's it. Again, the only other thing that I would recommend on a gun would be the sling, whether it's a 2-point, or a 1-point, again, I'm a fan of the 1-point that turns into a 2-point, so you can use it as needed, and a forward grip. Because what we teach, we have a technique that we teach, which is specifically designed to reduce the recoil of that gun, allow you to shoot faster and more accurately, and that forward grip actually benefits you in that technique.
I just wanted to reiterate one of the things that our guest said, that make sure that when you are operating a weapon system with a flashlight, that be aware that, you know, I tell people all the time, when they ask for a firearm, whether it be a handgun or a rifle with an optic mount or a laser mount, that when you do decide to mount that light or that laser to that firearm, just remember that when you're in a high-stress situation in particular, that firearm, wherever that light or lasers is pointing, is going to be pointed at – the firearm is going to be pointed in the same direction. So absolutely. If you're pointing a firearm and you have a light and you're using the light to see or to look as you're creeping through your house because you heard a noise or your laser, and then you're using the light to determine something, and if you're not practicing firearm safety – 101, and you have your finger in the trigger guard, and you trip, or Fluffy the cat jumps in front of you, bang! Well, there goes yep. Fluffy the cat. That's one of the downfalls, obviously, we want to remember, in particular regarding lights and lasers.
Yep,
I just
absolutely.
Wanted to put that out there.
A lot of times, honestly, they until you're put into the position where you're having to use the weapon, the flashlight, the optics, your sling, and so you're actually using it in a realistic environment, wherever that may be, you're not going to appreciate the pitfalls, downsides, and the upsides of your equipment and your technique. And I know there's a lot of information on the internet. There's a lot of information in books, there's a lot of information, videos, and that's great. But there's no way that you can simulate that feeling, that light bulb switching on as putting on that gear, walking out the door, getting into a 360 range, running around with that firearm. That's where you're really going to find out for yourself, you know, what does and doesn't work for you, you know, in your application. I had a student come to us, take a class. It was a nice size class. It was like 18 guys, and it was a mix. We had contractors, some security contractors, we had some law enforcement guys and some civilians. It was a nice mix. And this particular guy showed up, and he's a very small guy, physically, small guy, maybe 5'4", 5'5", little guy, small boned, had a lovely gun, but within 2 hours, we had to give him a different firearm, because the firearm he had so much stuff on it, he physically couldn't hold this thing up anymore and run around and shoot. Something that he hadn't given any thought to. He bought the best gun that he believed money could buy, put the best equipment on it he thought money could buy, and he did, without question. But 2 hours into the training, you know, he had to have a rest and then borrow somebody else's gun, which was 5 pounds lighter, so he could keep shooting. And that sounds silly, and you think, you know, I wouldn't make that mistake. You'd be surprised, you know. How many times have you picked up that weapon and run around with it for 7 hours and shot 600 rounds in a tactical environment? The answer is I haven't. You don't really know how well you or your equipment's going to perform.
And, well, I couldn't have said it better myself, my friend. You've certainly given us a lot to think about. In particular, just making sure that in regards to training, that we certainly do our best to get trained, because without training, we really don't have any skills at all. Those of us, I'm not saying personally, but those who are out there who have firearms need to make sure that we do go, in fact, get training. And whatever firearms you have, get training. I'm running real close on time here, Will, but I certainly thank you. You've been a great interview and a great help to all of us out there. And for more information, go to theexecutivesolution.com, or you can go ahead and go to floridafirearmstraining.com for more information on Will Ferrugia. Will, thank you so much for being a guest on Radio Free ARFCOM.
It was an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thank you, sir. I hate to let you go so quick, but I'd spend all night talking with you if it wasn't for my producer telling me we got to run. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, Radio Free ARFCOM, the time is winding down now. Unfortunately for the rest of us, we have to go to the zombie tip of the week. Now, you all know that is the time in the program where we discuss the surviving the plague of the shambling, brain-eating scourge of humanity, zombies. I've actually got a couple of topics I was going to discuss regarding the shambling hordes of undead this week, but I will try to make it quick. First was the revolver. Which would you pick? An interesting subject choice for those of us not fond of revolvers. I'm going to skip that one because I hate revolvers and I don't have any. I would grab my AR-15 or my M1A. Give me all the hate mail you want for that. I'd appreciate the response. Next up, why do we have a thing for zombies? Although my question is, why did they have a thing for us and our brains? I knew my folks coming from Chippin's Lag from New Mexico, a new poster, February, post count 27, probably a troll, but here we go. I know why folks like us don't have a thing for vampires. It's because vampires are totally gay. And, of course, that's why women love vampires so much and have Twilight tattoos and T-shirts depicting girly boy vampires. But why is it zombies for us? Is it just the fear that turns us on? Is it the irony that something slow, dumb, and weak may very well be the worst disaster you could ever face simply because of their sheer numbers? thereby giving us the fear we like to feel and validate our innate conservative urge to prepare. Or, when we are preparing, are we just using that as an excuse to buy thousands of dollars worth of guns, ammo, knives, and other gears to, quote, prepare? I know I've used that as an excuse to assure an assault rifle for every member of my family, even my daughters, ages 5 and 6, and my son, 11 months old. Or is it simpler and more primitive than that? Maybe we just like the idea and actually crave the opportunity to shoot thousands and thousands of people without actually committing murder. I think about this stuff constantly. Read books. Evaluate my home and surroundings. Fuel and ammo sources around my city. Routes of escape. Paved and unpaved. Will I try to get to various members of my family around the city and in other states? Or just take care of my wife and kids? And sometimes catch myself thinking it would be cool to be on a rooftop surrounded by thousands of zombies and just have the bricks and bricks of 22 ammo just sit there and drink beer and plink all day long. Piss over the wall on all of them. Dump flammables on them and line them up. I think it's funny how to see a bunch of zombies on roller skates spending the rest of their eternity trying to stand up just to fall down again over and over while I just stare at them and giggle. But that's just sick. Sick and wrong, isn't it? Again, that is for a new member, Chippin Slag from New Mexico. Not yet a team member, Chippin Slag. I encourage you to buy a team membership here on Radio Free Arfcom so you can contribute posting on the zombie forum. I'm running out of time, so please be sure to click on the link for the Special Operations Support Raffle on AR15.com. Thanks to AR15.com for hosting the show. And most importantly, thanks to the Radio Free Arfcom fans. And be sure to accidentally the whole show to all your friends. And please visit AR15.com site sponsor links. And support the team by purchasing a team membership in the AR15.com store. As always, thank you for listening. And I encourage you to tune in next week for another great show. But until then, this has been your Radio Free Arfcom. Thanks again, folks. Tune in next week.
The chair is against the wall. The chair is against the wall. John has a long mustache. John has a long mustache.
Winfrey. This is Monday, August. What is today? August. Terry, do you know what day today is? Today it is August 9th.
Ninth.
We got it. And we are doing our Monday night call on BBS Radio. And welcome to everyone that's listening. As you know, we do this with a conference call. We haven't connected to the conference. We've done something different today. We've connected to the radio, and we're going to connect with the conference in just a moment. But just to share with you, this is a rather unusual hour. This is a rather unusual experience. And if you're new, just to give you an overview, I'm the author of the book about David Wilcock called The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. And the book documents this voice that was talking to David starting in 1996 that identified itself as a group oversoul for our planet. Not a single entity, but a group entity that was huge, maybe millions of individual entities. And 2 years into writing the book, in 2002, I became a contactee of a voice that started speaking to me through two personal relationships. It also identified itself as a group oversoul. And at that time, they just said, ask us questions. Well, I asked many questions, and it took me a few years to come to the conclusion that I was speaking, or that I think I'm speaking, or was speaking, to an energy that's at the center of creation, so to speak. In other words, the way they describe it is that everything exists simultaneously, and so there is no time, ultimately, and that somehow we had made a track, a path, to communicate not just by intelligence, but also energy to an intelligence, a group intelligence, that exists at the beginning of time. Well, that was my experience. That's how they describe themselves. When you're listening to this, I tell everybody, draw your own conclusions. This is stuff that obviously can't be proven scientifically. Although, if you read my material, there's a huge amount of what could be called anecdotal evidence, statistical improbabilities of the way things are explained that almost make a perfect case. But you have to study it to come to that conclusion. So on these calls, on our Monday calls, we ask them questions, and by and large, we focus on the wisdom of understanding the shift we're in and how to cope with it from our human side. And my friend Terry, are you there, Terry? Hello, Terry.
I'm Terry? Here.
You there?
Yeah. Okay. I'm here.
Okay. My friend Terry has been dedicated very much to this work, and three times a week you have an opportunity to listen to these conversations. And again, we are not proclaiming any kind of truth for anybody. We're just conversing with his voice that has been speaking to me for a long time. And many people who have tuned into these calls and listened seem to have gotten a great deal of benefit out of it. So it may work for you, it may not. In any case, let me cut into the conference calls. We started these calls out on conference calls, not on the radio. And so we still have a conference call going on in just a moment. I'm going to connect everything up.
Before I even acknowledge that.
Mm-hmm. We are now, you are now on the conference call. You are on the radio. Hi, Hive.
Hive had to go when, so I'm going to fill in for him.
Oh, Hive had to go. Okay.
Yeah.
Hi, Dina.
He mentioned I have to go. Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad we're just explaining on the air. Terry, are you there?
I'm here.
I'm just making sure I didn't cut anybody off. How we have this conference call tied up with BBS Radio. And when we have these conversations, which we publicly and live and unrehearsed 3 times a week, what I have learned is that a group energy. Hi there, somebody just came in. Want to say your name and your city?
Yes, this is Edna from Indiana. How are you?
Hi, Edna. Nice to have you. You know what? I'm going to mute everybody because we're live on the air now.
All callers are muted and they can unmute themselves.
Okay. And let me see.
Entry and exit chimes are off.
Now, what was I saying? I was talking about how we establish a group energy. And a group energy means that the people on the conference call, and also you who are on BBS, but the people on the conference call are a little bit more closer in because we can talk, they can talk back to us. In fact, I might even have them say hello to everybody. Just a moment.
All callers are muted.
Just a second.
All callers are unmuted.
Okay, the conference line is open. Would you guys be willing to say hello to everybody that's listening on the Internet? Are you ready? One, two, three.
Hello, and welcome.
Okay, now you guys on the Internet, we can't hear you. So you have to shut your eyes and think hello back to us. We got it. Thank you. All right. Well,
all callers are muted and they can unmute themselves.
That's like a little idea of group energy. Just any time people do something together like that, there's an energy created. And we start blending our energies in other realms. And you can notice it because there's a little upliftment of spirit. You feel a little better. You don't feel alone like some of you are listening tonight. And maybe you're alone. And maybe you're lonely. And right now, you're not. You're feeling the energy of the connection. And when you start feeling energies that are not in the physical, what I learned was the voices that were communicating to me were not just voices. They were also energies not in the physical, and that they had the ability to join our energy. And, you know, just as when I say that, it starts to happen. They're paying attention to us. Either that or I'm crazy. You can decide. But we've been doing this a long time and watching very, very carefully. I have. And when we're on these calls, people feel their energies. They're paying attention to you. But they won't violate your free will. They're very, very respectful of every person's individuality. So they will only come into your energetic space if you invite them, if you say it's okay. And some people can feel them. So be open to the possibilities. And just for a moment, if you want to feel their energy, we do this on Sunday, and it's very powerful. Today we're just going to do a quickie. Even though the energy is here, the people that are on the line all the time, as soon as they get on the line, they feel it. And it's not me. I'm just kind of a referee or a facilitator. And I just learned that if I did this, they would do that. And it's been so consistent that I can speak about it with some degree of confidence because of the consistency. This has been going on now for 8 years. And I didn't speak about it confidently 8 years ago, I said, uh-oh, what is going on here? It felt like I was in a science fiction movie. And so for you who are listening, make it your own experiment and see if you want to, if you can tune in. There's a lot of advantages to tuning in to these energies. I would say the greatest advantage is that, now this is my take on this, when you die, you go to where your energy is attached to. For example, if your energy is attached to your family, you'll return to your family. If you love a city, you can return to that same city. Of course, this is exactly the reason why people reincarnate, because they're still attached to energies in this realm, and they keep coming back to what they're attached to. Well, when you can learn to connect with an energy that's not in this realm, that's not in the physical realm, and you make that a strong connection, and you become familiar with it, then when you die, I believe you'll be still connected to that energy, and you will have gotten off the wheel of reincarnation. You won't have to come back because your energies are not connected. Now, that doesn't mean you don't love everything while you're here. You do. You love it even more. You love your family. You love your city. You love everything you do. But simultaneously to being connected to all those energies, you become detached from them, and you're now connected to an energy that is, that I believe is loving and caretaking, and that will, they say this is true when I've asked them, is able to greet you in, when you pass from this realm to another. So that is a good reason to keep listening to these calls in case I'm right on this. And they talk to us, and tonight we're going to ask more questions about keeping your heart open. And those of you who have listened last week know there's more to keeping your heart open than just being a nice guy. There's a lot to it. It's not being nice, although that certainly is a help. It's not being a sucker and being doing what everybody wants you to do. Keeping your heart open, your heart is an energy in your chest. It's an energy, and it's not emotions. It's above emotions. It's a radiation from you into the world around you. And when your heart is truly open, I remember hearing somebody saying this many years ago, when your heart is really open, you shine like the sun. You don't decide who you're open to and who you're not. You just radiate, and people feel it. It's not like being nice and being friendly. That is different than an open heart spiritually. It can be include that, but making your heart open, try it right now. You know, we have the energy with us. See your heart radiating an energy into the space around you. When your heart is open and someone comes near your space, they will feel it if they're receptive to that kind of energy. And you don't have to say anything. And you don't have to be nice. And you don't have to be charitable. You just radiate that energy. That is learning what we're learning here to do. One of the things is how to hold the energy of an open heart. Now, this is something that when you're not doing that, because nobody does that all the time that I've ever met, including me. So when you're not holding that energy open, be sure and not judge yourself. Because one of the things that people do sometimes is they say, I'm no good. My heart's not open. There's something wrong with me. And the more you judge yourself, the harder it is to get open. So we're going to take a look at the wisdom of how to do that, continuing from with our sources tonight. And our sources, again, they call themselves Ra-An, and they're a conglomeration of two group souls. And Terry, are you there?
I'm here.
I'd like to check. Making sure. Okay. So are you ready?
Yes.
You know, this is always something.
Don't forget to record when.
Oh, yes. God. I should have been recording all that stuff. Just a second.
Please enter your PIN followed by pound. Please wait. This conference is now being recorded.
This is Monday, August 9th, Winfrey. This is our Monday night conference call, and we're going to be having a discussion with our sources about how to keep your heart open. And I was just explaining that our sources, from a human level, it's hard to imagine our sources. If you keep coming to these calls, you'll get the idea. They describe themselves to be group souls outside of time that can move into time, move into the space that you and I are in with something called love light energy. And when that happens, we start to feel the connection. Even when we're alone, we can feel a presence with us. And they say, and I believe it's true, that right at this moment, they're watching or paying attention or blending or connecting with each of you on this line that are open to having such a connection. And if you're new here and you're checking it out, that's fine, because you should check it out. You should make sure you're comfortable with it. We're talking about open hearts, and all of us in this realm, most of us, have lifetimes of hurt. And when we try to open up our heart in the old-fashioned way, which is emotionally, oftentimes we get burned. And I was saying that the new way, the spiritual way of opening your heart, is not thinking of it as an emotional connection, but as a radiance from your chest, a radiance that goes out from you and affects the vibrations of everything around you. So if someone is in your space, they feel that radiance. You become a walking prayer, so to speak. Where you go, people feel that energy. Now, maybe you'll do this just a couple hours a week, and then you'll go back to your old patterns. It's okay. You have to be patient with yourself, because we all have gone through many lifetimes of hurt, and as a habit, most of us don't have our hearts open, and most of us don't do that. So this is something to learn. And we're talking to a celestial intelligence that says they created this realm, and I can't prove that that's true, but you can consider the possibility, and that we talked to them through my friend Terry Brown, and they say they have blended with Terry. So it's not them talking through Terry. Terry is part of the group when they're talking. And so that's why sometimes people say, are you sure she's not making that up? Well, I know Terry for a long time. She couldn't possibly be making it up. And in all deference to Terry, she's not, can I say that you're not wise enough to come up with the kinds of things they say, Terry?
Well,
are you there?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. I can say that, right?
Yeah, it's when they start coming through, they're very intelligent, and not only intelligent, but they're so loving. And so they just come up with things that I would not come up with myself.
Terry never knows the questions we're going to ask. And when sometimes she knows a question before we do it, she starts panicking. She says, how am I going to answer that? So this really is totally spontaneous. And we are going to right now call in the light, which is creating, invoking a group energy with all of us and our sources. And we will then be asking them questions. Father, Mother, God, we ask for the presence of the light to surround and protect each person on this line, each person listening, each person who listens on the replay line. And we right now let any negativity go into the higher realms of light and be transmuted for the highest good of all concerned. We see ourselves in the flow of energy radiating from the center of the universe, through all the galaxies, through all the solar system, through the outer energies of the earth, through our bodies, through our feet, and into the center of the earth. And right now, we invoke a group energy of all of us present, while maintaining the individual integrity of our souls. And we invite those sources that are positive, service to other, operating in the law of one, to join with us. And we create a protected space that only the positive has access to. And anything not of that nature must leave now. Those of you who are sensitive, whose eyes are shut, I'll take just a few seconds of silence so that you can feel the energies that we are creating. I'm not doing this. You're doing it. We're doing it right now, all across the United States and even the world. We have people listening to these calls all over the planet. Take just a short moment of silence. And while you're feeling that energy, put all your cares and woes in it. Just let it go. Ask for whatever help you need. Do it now while the energy is present with you. Okay, and we will let our sources introduce themselves.
We greet you in the love light of the one infinite creator. This is Ra'an, and today is August 9th, 2010. We greet each and every one of you and are available to make connection and connect and touch through and through each and every person who so wishes. We are mindful of the topic of the open heart, and we address this by saying we of the Elohim part of Ra'an, we do not have physical bodies, and therefore we consist of an energy which is above duality and is part and parcel of love. Love streams out from us, and we do not fear the third density death or the third density threats, the third density fears. We do not share these as we are not physical in the sense that a body has, as one of the elements within it, matter, and so can be dematerialized or dissolved or pass away. When one becomes so connected to the body that they identify with the body and see the world around them as a threat to the future existence of their own self, then they become part of matter itself, although they are not. They act and think as if they are part of the matter, and therefore it makes it harder to open their hearts. The other part of the group Ra'an is Ra, and we as Ra have had bodies, and we understand the struggles to overcome the protection that one seeks to put in place and the defenses one seeks to put in place when they are in the third density. And as we understand that, we have had to climb out of the third density matter identification quandary and to again realize our true nature as spiritual beings who as such are out of time and space and therefore cannot be destroyed. Those are opening comments.
You know, most people, when they think of having an open heart, I think they think of emotions. And they think of love in an emotional sense. But I have the idea that a spiritual open heart is a little different than emotions. And that it's actually, a body is kind of like a transmitter of energies that are picked up through it rather than produced by it. And so an open heart means, I'm just suggesting this, means being able to get the clogging. It's not something you do by willpower, but it's something you do by getting the things out of the way that are there preventing the flow of energy. Is that a way of looking at it? Do I have that correct?
The emotions that you speak of are heartfelt, and we are not speaking of emotions per se, as emotions can lead one into love or an aspect of love is hate. One can be overcome by emotion, which then can lead one out of the area of the open heart. Whether this is generated by the person or is picked up from outside of the person, his emotions. Often these emotions are reactions to outside causes. So the individual, when they are caught up in the emotions, may not properly react with an open heart to a situation. But they may lash out or respond in a reaction for which then later they suffer consequences and then end up in a dead end with the closing down of the heart as reaction. Above all of the physical planes, reactions and emotions, there is the spiritual vibration, very high vibration of love that knows no bounds and does not close down. It is a very high vibration and works through not only the heart center, but the higher centers and in harmony with all of the chakras of the body.
Another question is about DNA. I have gotten the idea through all our conversations that there is a connection between the strands of DNA and the chakras. In other words, the fourth strand of DNA would relate to the heart of energy. And so the DNA is like a blueprint for our body, and that if someone is going to maintain an open heart in this realm, it would seem, am I correct in saying, their fourth strand of DNA would have to be activated?
The DNA resonates in harmonious the words are resonances, and in the harmonious resonances within the DNA, the DNA acts as the structural foundation for a vibratory system of connection with the stars and with the higher forces. When one is able to move past the identification with the lower realms only, but is able to take in the higher vibrations and resonances, including the fourth strand of DNA, different strands of DNA will resonate in different frequencies, much like a musical instrument bringing in information from the star systems and from the higher frequencies, and will tune the body so that the body is able to reflect the love of the spiritual plane in the purest sense.
So if somebody's fourth strand of DNA was not open, and they knew they had to get that open to have their heart open, can you explain the mechanism by which it all works, how the DNA strand opens related to the heart of energy?
It is more of a whole, not just dependent upon one strand, as it works in harmony with the multiple strands bringing through the harmonious resonances. There is a word that we are searching for. There is harmonious octaves, but harmonious fifths, and the strings of the DNA operate together to bring harmony in, so, and to bring through resonances as the tuning of a guitar. So one cannot just say they are tuning the fourth string of DNA to open the heart chakra. It must be tuned in unison to be able to resonate the heart frequency. There are also nerve centers within the system, which within the body dictate that the whole system will shut down if the person is under attack and feels need for defense. Then the paralyzation begins. It's like muting the strings so that the individual can see what is needed to be able to survive danger. And in that shutdown, one does not feel able or have the attention available to open, and they do not wish to open toward the danger. And as long as they are sensing the danger, they have to operate at an extremely broad range of frequency to be able to have an open heart overriding this close down.
Thank you. You know, sometimes I look at the body like a mechanical instrument that needs tuning up. And tuning up might mean getting the right exercise, eating the right food, having the right sexual expression, having enough sleep. How does all of these things, keeping the body tuned up, correspond with this idea of keeping an open heart?
When the body is kept well-fed, exercised, and feels safe and has the proper nurturing and care, it can move more easily with the spirit that inhabits that body to open, and the individual, this soul, then does not have its attention siphoned off. Its energy siphoned off by the body, and the energy becomes free for the soul to radiate out and to communicate and to become a part of their life in a broader sense, expanding into the spiritual realms. If a body may be injured, then it tends to, the individual tends to withdraw into oneself and pull one's energy in instead of radiating love out, and begins to pull energy in to begin to nurse its body. And it takes energy to a certain extent away from its exploration in the area of the open heart. There are some other circumstances where if the body is injured, the individual may have their death experience and may leave and may then experience equanimity, equalness, love, and then when it returns to the body, it will again experience pain, and attention will go into healing of the body.
Thank you. At this moment, right now, we have a number of people listening to this call and who will listen to it in the future. Could we have an experience, ask for an experience of an opening of a heart connection with you for those who are interested? If we just take a moment of silence, can you look around and kind of blend with those people on the line? Is that possible?
Yes, each and every person that is on the line or will listen to this call later may open to us as we are there. We are with them. We are sharing space. We are available to bring the vibration of love into their body, and if they wish it or have the capability to sense our presence, we then can share this space with them, and we are doing it now, and we indicate that we, as we share space with the individuals, that their own bodies are of a lower frequency, and we are sending a higher frequency of pure love with the color, if there would be a color attached of pink, that individuals can wrap around themselves like a blanket, a security blanket. And we send each and every one of them love. This is an experience for those that sense it, that they can go on in the future. The vibrations of this high frequency are woven into the tape, into the voice, and are available to be listened to. We feel your response, so they're in a sense, we see duality, the nonlinear sharing of space and the distance of space by saying out there, but it, see, there is no out there. It is all within you.
Thank you. We have 4 more minutes, and I know I'm a little bit spaced out. Probably some of you are too. I don't want to change the space and ask another question that would put me in my brain. I would say, if I ask a question, for the people that are experiencing this energy and this opening, many spiritual groups, practices talk about every day doing a meditation. And I would say this is a bit of a meditation of opening up to the vibrations of higher realms. Is that a good idea as a discipline to do that every day, say at the same time? Does that help make a consistency?
One can do this. One may do this every day. And it does make a consistency, and we would suggest perhaps after the sun goes down, perhaps at a time like this in the evening, and to spend this time going inward and connecting within yourself and feeling the love within.
And if someone has some trouble getting into it, maybe listening to this tape over or listening to our Sunday grid healing tape might help them move into this space, yes?
Yes, and also reading the words.
reading our books, Questions and Answers with the Elohim, The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. You know, Questions and Answers with the Elohim is filled with questions that I asked Terry and Daphne before we ever did this in a public way. And it was when I remember saying to myself, Jesus, they really are who they say they are. I better ask some questions that everyone wants to know about, like, what happens when you die? How do you work with us? And of course, we're covering the same material even in more detail, or in different detail, on this line. So right now, I think we are actually ending this show on time. It's 6:50, and we will come back to Earth in our bodies. I thank Terry so much for being present on these calls. I thank our sources. I thank BBS, and I thank all of you. And remember, on our Wednesday call, you can submit questions and send them to questions@messageaday.net, and we ask them, and they answer right live on the phone. So bless you all, and we'll talk to you later. And do you have any closing comments before we disconnect?
We send each and every one of you love, and we are honored by this connection. We are delighted. Words do not do the sacredness of this connection justice. Adonai.
Press 1 to stop recording. This conference is no longer being recorded. There are 1 moderator and 6 participants. All callers are muted. All callers are unmuted.
Okay, guys. See you later.
Thanks. See you when.
Thanks for being here.
It's Chris. I got here a little late.
Okay. Who is that?
It's Chris in Memphis. I got on kind of late.
Hi, Chris. Chris, I see sometimes we're Facebook buddies on the air at the same time.
Yeah, I see that.
There's no privacy on Facebook, is there?
No, but that's a good place for me to vent my little goofy comments. And
all right. So. Well, see you all later, and over and out.